She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And once again, I can promise you that we will be giving you lots to think about. So just hold on and get ready. It's another great show with an incredible guest and lots of really important information for all of us as consumers. But first, let me start by thanking our sponsor. Our show today is made possible due to the generous support of Habitat for Humanity, building homes, community, and hope. Their goal is to build safe, decent, affordable, quality houses for people in need. We thank them for their support and for all they do to make our community here in Tucson and around the country and our planet stronger and more sustainable. Thank you, Habitat for Humanity, and especially thank you, Habitat for Humanity, Tucson, Arizona. So the name of our show today is Fashion Giant with a Conscience. Joining me for this hour is Amy Hall, Director of Social Consciousness. Now, everybody, just think about that. This is a title at a major fashion maven company. Director of Social Consciousness at Eileen Fisher, a true fashion giant. According to everything that I read and according to fashion magnate Eileen Fisher, the clothing industry is the second largest polluter in the world, second only to oil. It's a really nasty business, says Eileen. It's a mess. So in addition, fashion is a complicated business. It involves long and varied supply chains of production, raw material, textile manufacture, clothing construction, shipping, retail, use, and ultimately disposal of the garment. We're going to address a lot of those. So Amy is here to share with us some exciting and even hopeful initiatives that Eileen Fisher and her team are taking on to address some of the things I just mentioned and to help turn things around. It's going to be quite a slow turnaround unless there are miracles that happen. So Amy, thanks for joining us and let's get going.
Thank you, Gina.
Yeah, there's lots to cover. So let's start with something fun. I, in reviewing this and thinking about how daunting it is, why don't we start with the Green Eileen Initiative, how it got started and what kind of impact it has had to date, because it started in 2009.
Yes, that's correct. So Green Eileen is our company's clothing take back and recycling initiative. We started it back in 2009 for a couple of reasons. One was that Eileen herself was becoming, I guess, distressed that we were contributing as a clothing company to so much waste in the world. And our clothing is made with the intention to last for a long time because of its style, its timeless style, and the quality. And so she felt like we need to find a way to give that clothing more life once the customers no longer want some of their items. The second reason was that she had launched a leadership program for girls and needed a way to support that program. It is through the community, the Eileen Fisher Community Foundation. So we founded the Green Eileen Initiative, whereby customers and employees bring back no longer wanted Eileen Fisher clothing, usually gently worn. And for every item that's brought back, we issue a gift card worth $5 towards a future purchase. And all of that clothing is sorted, cleaned, and about half of it makes it back to a sale rack, either in a standalone Green Eileen store or one of our company stores. And the proceeds from the sale of that clothing went into the Community Foundation, which supported the Leadership Institute. We have since absorbed the Green Eileen initiative into the company, but we still take a percentage of sales and donate them to charitable organizations, mostly women's and girls' organizations.
I mean, it's amazing. I just want to ring the bell and say this is the, it's like more like a life cycle of clothing that you're repurposing. And tell us about, I didn't know until I started doing more research on this. I'm certainly familiar and have purchased my share of Eileen Fisher clothing. But what about the, in terms of the fashion industry overall, do they want their clothes back? I would say not typically. It's like get them out the door and put new ones on the rack. Is that a bucking the trend?
You know, I will say we are not the first company to launch a clothing take-back initiative. There are several brands that do this that started before we did and have and now do have added this to their business model. H&M, Marks & Spencer, let me think if there are any others. Those are the two that come to mind
right
now.
But it's great for you to mention that, and I was not aware of that. They're not, I mean, H&M is for hot, hit, happening skinny girls, my daughters, and not one, you know, not for my demographic. So that's really also good and encouraging to know, and thanks for that shout out. So I read one thing, and it was 2 or 3 years ago, where the incredible success of it, to me, speaks volumes about where the market is. Were you expecting the kind of response? Because you get tons. I read something like you got 8 tons in the first 3 months. That's a lot of giving back of clothing.
You know, I would say we were blown away by yes. by the success of it, to the point where originally we thought of this maybe sort of as a standalone project. We didn't think of this as actually a business model necessarily from the beginning. And it wasn't until we had been doing this for a couple of years when we realized we actually need a standalone store to manage all the sales of this product. And that's how we ended up opening a store, a Green Eileen store in Yonkers and in Seattle. And they have been very successful, actually becoming profitable over the last year and a half or so, which, you know, says a lot, I think.
I think it speaks volumes.
Yeah.
And I am coming to New York in April with my daughter and her new husband, which is really exciting for us. So we will have to go to a Green Eileen store. She
Yay.
Said one of the things she wants to do is check out some of the secondhand stores. I mean, I'm sure you know there's a big Buffalo Exchange in the city and in Brooklyn. So we'll be checking out Green Eileen for mother. So and maybe daughter. I have to go and see what it's like. You know, in looking at the magnitude and scope of the challenges in the and it's almost scandalous, the industry. I think it's just helpful if we go through some of those industries, of those issues, those topics, and what you're doing to address them, because I think that's the meat of this show. So let's start with Made in the USA. I mean, 97% of garments sold in the USA are made elsewhere, which to me is part of the problem. But you produce 20% of yours in New York and Los Angeles. Can you talk a little bit about that and why it matters so much?
You know, we've always had a presence in the United States. There was a time in our, you know, maybe a couple of decades ago where we produced the majority of our clothes in the United States. But for lots of reasons, we had to shift overseas. Many people would assume that we shifted overseas because of cost. And in fact, our primary reason for shifting overseas was to be closer to the skill required to make the kinds of clothes that we make, a lot of silks, a lot of sweaters. The U.S. just doesn't have that skill level anymore in its garment, among its garment workers. So, but we have always wanted to maintain a presence here for a lot of reasons. One, from a transportation issue and a carbon issue, you know, we certainly save quite a bit on shipping, starting if we're just shipping from New York or from Los Angeles. And of course we want to support our own country's economy, there's no doubt. What's the kind of paradox in that is that our U.S. Factories, excuse me, are almost entirely populated by immigrants. So the garment industry in the United States has always been an immigrant industry, and it still is today. So when we talk about saving jobs in the U.S., I wonder how many people realize that we're not necessarily saving jobs for Americans who were born here, and whether that matters or not. We're certainly delighted to be able to provide sustainable employment to whomever wants to work in this industry. And so that's a main reason why we are here in the States. And I will say it is not easy to maintain that presence. I mentioned the skills. It can be more costly. The capacity, the volume is not here. The larger we get as a company, the more units we need to be able to produce to satisfy our customers. And factories in the United States tend to be quite small compared to those overseas. So, you know, it's kind of a give and take.
Amy, it's the quintessence of the Mrs. Green journey. I mean, you just encapsulated what happens to me when someone asks me a question. It's complicated. Look at the points that you covered. I just want to reflect back to you. I had a meeting with a wonderful woman named Charlotte Padilla yesterday from the University of Arizona in the fashion, in teaching in that area. And one of the things she said was what you said, closer to the skill. She said, we don't want to give up the beauty of some of the silks and the more artisanal things that we can get that bring beauty to clothing. So that means not made in the USA, because those skills don't exist here for the most part. And I love that you touched on the use of immigrant workers. Not easy. We have the same issue here with our produce and getting people to even pick our lettuce. So thank you for just really putting the light on, this is not just a quick fix, flip a switch, let's bring the jobs back here kind of thing. It's very complicated for good reasons also, because you're supporting things in other countries in, I believe, to be sustainable ways and moving more towards that. Okay, a big one. Organic fibers. And again, it's another complicated one that I want you to speak to, because is it certified organic? Is it supporting clean air and water and a healthy environment for workers? What are you doing in the area of organic fibers?
Okay, so Eileen Fisher has certain goals around fibers. For example, by the year 2020, so that's 4 years away from now, we want to be able to say that all of our cotton, 100% of the cotton in our products is organic.
Wow.
And then 100% also of our linen is organic. We actually believe that we will hit those targets before 2020. So that's the good news. And again, this is a very, nothing is black and white.
No, it's
complex. It seems like it should be easy.
Yes.
Or obvious. What I'm learning, what my team is learning about organic is that, first of all, it's not easy for farmers to become organic. There's there's several years of transition in changing the quality of the soil.
It's really expensive. Yes,
yes.
It's a rigorous process.
So the availability of cotton fiber or any kind of organic fiber is very low in the world. So we have that one issue, and it's going to take us a long time to increase that volume, and there has to be demand for it. So until more brands and more customers are asking for it, that growth may not happen very quickly. The second thing is that apparently there are that even the issue of organic certification is not black and white. You know, you can imagine in an area where there are a lot of farms, there might be one farm that's organic and the neighboring farm is not organic, and you can't put up walls between them, and cottonseed flies around in just this pure, simple, natural act of pollination. And so there is a little bit of infiltration between adjacent farms, so that a certified organic cotton farm may have traces of inorganic or conventional cotton in its fiber collection.
Right. So the wind blows, the water runs.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the birds carry. It's just, it's a planet.
Yeah. So these are very long-term issues. We are perhaps lucky because we're not a huge company, and so the volume of cotton that we need is available and not terribly hard to find.
Right.
But, you know, for this to become an industry-wide movement, we really need to step up all of our collective resources, our conversations with farmers, our advocacy with policy to make this to provide incentives for farmers to change, et cetera. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
A lot of work. And in terms of scale, I mean, cotton accounts for 35% of world fiber. And then on the other side, it's 17.5% of insecticide sales. And still, as you said, only a small fraction, about 1%, is organic. So those are big numbers when you talk about insecticide sales, but small numbers when it talks about the overall market. So what's the difference between organic fibers and talk about sustainable fibers? The more, tell us what that is and what that difference is and what's in your collection.
Okay, so organic simply refers to anything that was grown without the use of a chemical
right.
pesticide, right? So outside of that, there are all kinds of other implications for the agriculturally based fibers. And by the way, when you think of apparel, we at Eileen Fisher have come to recognize that we are essentially an agriculturally based company. Over 90% of our fibers come from a farm. And I think customers forget that connection, you know. We have cotton, we have linen, which comes from flax, we have wool, which comes from sheep, we have cashmere, which comes from goats, Tencel, all kinds of rayon, any kind of rayon-based fiber comes from trees, so tree pulp. So
right.
There are huge implications for how all those fibers are sourced. There's water use, how much water and what's the quality of the water, both that goes into the fiber and that comes out once it's been grown. So if there are pesticides, chemical pesticides being used, or chemical fertilizers, that will have a polluting effect on the water table. So we have goals around water and trying to influence both the quality of the water and the quantity of the water that goes into the fibers and the processing of our fabrics. And I'm deviating a little bit, but to get to your point about sustainable, that can imply how the fabric was dyed. So if it was not dyed, that means there were no additional chemicals
right.
layered onto a fiber or fabric. So that could be a sustainable fabric. It could have been raised in an ethical manner. So we're talking about wool, sheep, for example. Were they allowed to graze freely? What were they eating? what's the land management?
What's the full
of that
cycle
farm?
Of life for this piece
exactly.
of clothing I'm putting on my body? It's complicated.
So,
yes.
Yeah. Those are just a couple of examples.
And one of the things that I think falls under that, and maybe you can talk about a little bit, is recycled fibers. Why is that trending up a little bit in the industry?
Well, you know, when we think about how much waste we generate as an industry, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me on that point, but there is so much textile waste in the world. We are filling up landfills so fast with not just, so there's used and discarded apparel. I think
right.
we all know how much we throw away as individuals every year from our closets. We do our closet cleanup. We have waste from factory floors, you know, the scraps of fabric that weren't actually used. They were cut away from the pattern.
Right.
We have other kinds of textile waste from our homes, curtains, shower curtains, automobile textiles, etc. All of that is filling up our landfills. And so if we have any hope of saving our planet, one huge issue that we need to address is the waste. So by recycling, by finding solutions to regenerate some of that wasted textile into new textile, turn it into new fabric and new garments, that will help eliminate a lot of waste. So that's one reason. The second reason is that the raw materials that go into our
Amy,
our fabric,
I told you this
yes.
would happen. Hold that
yep,
thought
I'll hold
on raw materials. We'll be right back. Great conversation. Time flying. Amy Hall, Director of Social Consciousness at Eileen Fisher. Everybody, stay here with us.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific Time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks so much for being with us. Just another quick shout-out to Habitat for Humanity, Building Homes, Community, and Hope. We thank them for their support of the Mrs. Green's World mission and vision. The name of our show today is Fashion Giant with a Conscience. Joining me for this hour is Amy Hall, Director of Social Consciousness at Eileen Fisher, a true fashion giant, and at its helm is a woman with a conscience who is working to make the second largest polluter in the world more sustainable. Amy truly has the inside track. If you just joined us, go back to the beginning of the show. She has the inside track on all that Eileen Fisher initiatives are impacting and is here today to share with us about that and as much as we can. And as I said to you earlier, Amy, it's going to be Eileen Fisher and Amy Hall part one and two, because we've got lots to cover. So sustainable fibers is what we were talking about, and let's pick up where we left off.
So I was just beginning to talk about raw materials and why it matters, why raw materials matter to the current trend of recycled fiber. So we are a planet that is suffering from overuse, overconsumption. I believe the statistic hovers around, we're currently a world using three planets worth of resources,
yes.
Which of course we don't have. So when we think about every kind of fiber that goes into apparel, we are tearing down trees to make rayon and all kinds of rayon products. We are farming itself, livestock farming, where we get wool from and cashmere and other, there's alpaca. Animals that are raised on farms are huge consumers of the world's limited resources. Water used to grow the grain they need to eat. People forget about that kind of impact that apparel has. So by being able to turn old fiber into new fiber, we are eliminating the need for new raw materials, or at
right.
least reducing it. The challenge is we are not there yet with the technology. There are a number of parallel efforts going on right now, research efforts, prototypes being made to turn, for example, cotton waste into new fiber. And I believe in the next couple of years we will be able to say that there is a commercially ready recycled
wow.
fabric available,
wow.
and hopefully it will have this kind of impact that on the waste stream that we need to have.
That's huge. I mean, that is really, truly used. It's like a whoa, and gives us hope, because some of this is really so heavy. Now, two other areas that you might be able to talk about separately or combine them. You know, dyeing is the devil. Hazardous chemicals for colors, usually harsh, lots of water use, intensive, let's go on, a danger to the workers. So why does it matter? Why does certified dyeing matter? And what are you doing about that?
Okay, so
it's a big one. I know.
It's a It is big. And again, you know, this is one of these areas of the gray. I like to call it the gray. It's not black and white.
Got it.
You know, we may go in as a customer to our favorite store and ask for organic cotton product or organic something, but we overlook that there are, you know, what is that product dyed with? What is it finished with to give it a beautiful texture or feel? So all of those processes layer on all kinds of chemistry that not only, well, I would say for the worst thing about the chemistry that is used is because it is that it pollutes the planet. It goes into the water table wherever that product was created, and it pollutes the water system, which in turn then has a health impact and a health risk to the people in that community, let alone the people in the actual dye house or finishing facility,
right,
where that product was processed. So we have partnered with an organization called Blue Sign. It's a Swiss organization that has developed a certification and a methodology to eliminate the worst of those chemicals and promote the cleanest chemistry available currently for dyeing and finishing fabric. And so all of our silks are now Blue Sign certified. And there are a couple of other fabrics that are beginning to become Blue Sign certified in our product line. And, you know, we're not, again, the first to go down this path. Patagonia and many of the outdoor
right.
retailers were first with Blue Sign and, you know, really leading the way. So I think what's important is that consumers begin to think about all the elements that go into their product. It's not just about the fiber or just about the labor, but they're, you know, every single touch point along the way has an implication on the planet.
And then you move into, it's complicated. Like everything you're saying, I'm saying she's so spot on. People want simple answers. And, you know, part of what was going on for me as I sat listening is that, we lived in a world where people are asking a lot of these questions. They're just going in and buying clothing. That's the baseline. They're not saying, is this certified organic? Is it fair trade? Is it this? I mean, I think it's trending in the right direction. But, you know, the bottom line is a lot of consumers today don't care. And it's possibly because they don't know. It's not they consciously, you know what I mean? They don't say, I don't care about that. They're not even aware of the cost of an item that they're putting on their bodies. So that's my little tirade. But what about when it comes to undyed and natural dyes? Is this a better alternative? And I guess I'd like to know how much of your company can even commit to that, because not, you know, people love their bright red clothing. One of the worst is red, as we all know. So what about undyed and natural dyes?
Well, undyed is definitely the best
way to go,
because
right.
you're not putting anything on it, right?
Right?
So we consider any product that's undyed to have an eco component, and a very big eco component. That product would receive a high sort of eco rating in our internal review process.
Right.
Natural dyes are not, again, as simple as one might think. First of all, it will probably come as no surprise that natural dyes don't always have the vibrancy of color that we love, nor do they necessarily last as long. So, you know, they may wash out over time or fade over time. So in order to make them stay, you have to apply an additional chemical to make them to have the longevity that you want to have. So, our fabric team and our designers are always looking for solutions that will satisfy our sustainability goals. And natural dyes are certainly on the list, but finding one that also provides the performance and the aesthetic quality is really, really tough. There are other considerations that, I don't know how big this is, but you know, when you make a natural dye, if you work with somebody who uses natural dyes, what are those dyes actually made of, and right. what had to be grown or
it just goes
killed,
deeper.
Or did it remove yes. another crop, you know, did it yes. replace another crop in order to produce this dye, which is suddenly so popular? It's a big kind of a web. Everything's connected to something else.
It is. It goes out wide and deep. And, you know, it just brings to the point, and I don't want to go here yet because there are other important aspects of what you're doing, but what I would love as a consumer, what I do with food, I find labels and brands that I trust and manufacturers and sources, and then that's it. I stick to those because I know I don't have to worry. It's like a clear conscience if I buy this USDA certified X. And with clothing, it's just not that easy. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I completely agree.
I want to go somewhere that says, this clothing will not harm you, and nobody has been harmed in the making of it either. I mean, it's just, it would be so liberating.
You know, I don't know if we're moving in that direction in terms of labeling. Every brand has the things that are easy for it to pursue and the things that are more challenging, and even every brand category, every clothing category has different areas that it emphasizes and different values. So coming to some kind of united, agreed upon standard, I think will be very challenging. Who's to say, just because something is perhaps less toxic to the environment, what are the other unintended consequences that may be present that hadn't even been considered because we haven't gotten that far in our scientific development.
Right. And I had a guest on my show, I don't know, it might have been a year ago, named Alok, and he has a company here called Fed by Threads. And that's the store where you can go and buy it, and it's guilt-free clothing. 100% sure. It's limited in its the number of articles of clothing. They happen to be things that I really like. And he talked to me about the organization called, I think it's called CATA, the Consumers Against Toxic Apparel. How are things like that impacting the industry, and what are the challenges?
So I'll be honest, I had never heard of Consumers Against Toxic Apparel until I was preparing for this conversation. When I looked at what they are doing, it seems to me it is all based on the chemistry in the fabric.
Okay.
So, and they do call for organic. They do recommend that consumers wear organic undergarments. And they do seem to have a call to action around consumption, how many items you buy,
right,
how
right.
often you shop, that kind of thing. But again, you know, it sort of scratches the surface. So, for me personally, I would want to know, how was this item made? Who how much was somebody paid? How were the people who made this item treated? Were they able to put food on their table every meal of the day, all day, all week long? Those are real issues that have very little transparency in our supply chain and in our purchasing, I should say.
In our purchasing, and again, we're talking about it is complicated and it is challenging, but it's a perfect segue because you do address on the page, this is the most incredible page that I think everybody who's listening to the show, I mean, we've got thousands of listeners that are making changes, and the website, you gave me this incredibly wonderful page. It's Eileen Fisher, you know, / behind the label. And all of these things are discussed, and there's I full disclosure. So let's segue into the fair trade arena. Higher wages, investments in local communities. What are you doing in that arena? Huge.
So, yeah, okay. How do I explain this in a easy way? I'll say that we have been, we stepped into this space many years ago in the mid-90s when we realized that we had been, our company had been growing with consistent focus and attention to our own employees, but we had forgotten about the people who actually made our products. So around the mid-90s, we started to develop an awareness around the people in our supply chain, and we started to take some action. by joining certain initiatives, by adopting SA 8000, which is a code of conduct, a globally recognized code of conduct. And we started to monitor and audit our suppliers. Now, I mentioned the mid-90s, and fast forward to where we are now, the mid-teens, or 2000-teens, let's say. And if we really look at the difference between back then and now, there has not been, I would say, massive change in our supply chain. And I know that would come to a shock, to people as a shock. And when I say that, yes, there we have very high-quality suppliers. We have, I would say, very, oh no, they're state-of-the-art factories around the world, very conscientious suppliers, people who really do care. However, wages have remained fairly stagnant over the years. There hasn't been a big increase, and by and large, most of the people in our supply chain do not earn, in my opinion, a living wage. It is not that easy to make that change. We don't own any of our factories, and you know, we're dealing with independent businesses in their own right who have their own way of running their businesses. And each of those suppliers, many of them work with other brands who have sometimes the same and sometimes different goals. So we have, you know, some influence, but not 100% influence over our suppliers. So what we've done over the years is worked incrementally on different aspects of our supply chain. We have put into place, an approach to working with artisans that I consider to be humane and ethical. And really, even though the artisan work in our supply chain is very low in terms of overall volume of our product, it's not our biggest risk or our biggest area of impact. I'd say it represents our biggest need, or the supply chain's biggest need. The people there perhaps earn the least amount. They are the most invisible of all the people. They don't have representation in the supply chain in the way that people in the factories might. So we've placed we've put a lot of resources into mapping those suppliers, the artisan communities where we source from, and understanding what their needs are, trying to listen very carefully to what they feel they need for their own livelihood and for their own communities, and then trying to invest in programs and invest in you know, access to health care, access to education for their children, et cetera. So that's one example. We also try to partner with the right kinds of suppliers. We have an amazing partner in Peru, Indigenous Designs, who is a fair trade certified supplier. And so we know that when we work with them, that the product that comes through that supply chain, which is an organic cotton supply chain, we can really depend on it. We trust it, and our customers can trust it too. So searching for the right suppliers has become, you know, a focus of ours as well.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, and then we have really specific goals for the year 2020, one of which is this fair wage and benefit goal, because we feel like without fair wages and benefits, our the people in our supply chain will never have an opportunity to have choices in their lives and to be able to stand up for what they feel they need in their workplace and in their communities.
And, you know, when you talk about artisans and looking at making an impact, I love the starfish story that I tell, and it's been part of my corporate culture for my companies, where, you know, the person's walking on the beach and there are thousands of starfish and they pick one up and throw it back, and someone says, "What are you doing? What are you doing? How do you think you're going to even begin to make a difference? Look at all these starfish." And the person picks up another one and says, "It made a difference for that one." And when I read about your the handloom project in India, there's 500 artisans. So that's going to change communities. It's going to change cultures and maybe create a life out of poverty and it's a ripple effect, as I call it. It's economic empowerment. So unfortunately, I have to say again, we have to go to another break. And when we come back, I'd love to talk about the Vision 2020 campaign. It was launched last year on Earth Day. And we cannot get off this show without talking about the very exciting news that you were certified as a B Corp. That's a big, huge thing. So we have a lot more to talk about when we come back. Everybody, just stay here with me. This is an amazing, informative interview with Amy Hall, who is the Director of Social Consciousness at Eileen Fisher. Obviously very passionate about moving this company in what I believe to be the right direction. Stay here with me.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And hopefully, each and every show, we bring you what I call a content-rich show with amazing, informative, passionate guests, and this show is certainly no exception. Joining me today is Amy Hall, Director of Social Consciousness at Eileen Fisher, and she is sharing with us what is going on in the world of Eileen Fisher. And I want to make sure that I say to everybody, go to EileenFisher.com, visit the Eileen Fisher / behind the label overview site, follow them on Twitter, it's Eileen Fisher. On Facebook, it's Eileen Fisher New York, from what I can see. You go to Facebook.com, and it's Eileen Fisher NY. And Instagram, same thing, Eileen Fisher NY. Pinterest, Eileen Fisher NY. They are things of beauty, because obviously I went and took time and followed them and did some, you know, a look at it. And Amy, I want to really talk about the Vision 2020 campaign, but can we first address the issue of consumption? Because one of the things with Eileen Fisher in my world, which is very real, I am a demographic that you are looking at to buy your clothing. They're expensive in the view of clothing, but when I make the purchase, I'm conscious that I'm buying something that's going to last, which really matters, and that it's an investment. And I think about, I don't need 5 jackets. I can buy an Eileen Fisher linen jacket and dress it up with scarves. I can wear it with jeans. I can wear it to dress up outfits. So is that a part of the consciousness that you think needs to shift? Pay a little more, buy a little less? Does that make sense?
I absolutely do think that consciousness has to shift. And a couple of things come to mind. First of all, I like to tell people that they should think of their clothing purchases as investments,
yes,
much the way we think of when we purchase an iPhone or an iPad or a car or something, or even a beautiful, you know, that event outfit, that special event outfit.
Right.
You think of it as
right.
an investment. So why not our everyday clothes as well? Second thing that comes up for me is I live in an old house that has been partially renovated but not completely, and one of the remaining closets, one of the closets is the original closet from 1926.
So it's pretty
small. I think it's about big enough for me to walk into, right, and turn around in barely. And that was the norm. And now I've read that the average closet size for Americans is 6 by 8 feet. I'm certain that many people listening have bigger closets and some have smaller closets. Why do we need that much clothing? I personally have one of those 6 by 8 closets, and it's kind of embarrassing. And yet we've fallen into this culture of, you know, need, want.
Right. And more.
Exactly. So I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that we take that issue of consumption very seriously. And although it seems like, you know, contrary to a business strategy.
Right. It's counterintuitive because you want to drive sales. I mean, let's be honest. Yes.
Yeah. No, we tell, I was just talking to people in our stores yesterday. They do tell people not to buy something if it isn't something they absolutely love or it doesn't look great on them. They will advise a customer not to buy it. And I feel like we need to be really honest with ourselves when we're shopping. Maybe even put it away and come back 2 days later and decide if we still really want it that badly.
Oh my gosh, it's such a really good message. And it's true. I am in such a different place now, and I'm embarrassed about the number of shoes I have and the amount of clothing. But the good thing is it's never too late to start making a change. And then it affects my children and their buying and my grandchildren. It's like, how can we get more with less, buy with less? And it's even scarves. Thank God for infinity scarves, because I'm not one of those fashion mavens that can get my scarves 16 different ways. You know what I mean? So it's scarves are a big help in the reducing new stuff. So let's talk about the Vision 2020 campaign. What is it, and how did it come about, and how's it going?
All right. Thank you. So I did mention that we've been working on a lot of these values for a long time. We were founded in 1984 with a commitment to natural fibers, and at that time that seemed like a very reasonable and noble commitment.
Yes.
Right?
And we can do this.
Yeah. So over the years, in the 90s, we added in a commitment to human rights in our supply chain, and you know, we were continuing to kind of dabble in new and different approaches to fibers that were eco-friendly. We've tried, we introduced organic cotton in a 2004 line, and we have tried cotton grown in colors. We've made fabric out of plastic water bottles over the years, so lots of different things. And it wasn't until Eileen herself was traveling and visiting some of our suppliers about 3 or 4 years ago now, where she just had a personal epiphany. She had been hearing a lot about the state of the planet, and particularly the water crisis, the global water crisis, and was really struck by the statistic whereby by the year 2030, where that's less than 15 years from now, the world's demand for water will exceed supply by 40%.
Oh. Oh.
And, you know, when you really think about that, that is a very frightening statistic. And I can't help but think about California,
right,
and the drought. So it's, you know, more real than ever in that state. So she came back and said, you know what, it's great that we've been doing what we've been doing, and I love the direction we're going in, but we need to pick it up. We need to go faster.
We need to pump up the volume. Yeah.
Yeah. So we gathered a lot of thought leaders in the company and took them off site and for 3.5 days, and we hired a consultant, and we had a guided brainstorming process, basically, around where we really wanted the company to go and what we thought the future of the company should be and the future of the product. And we came out of that offsite with what became Vision 2020. It was a new commitment to have the least amount of impact on our environment and the most impact on social value possible through our product and our practices. And we named it Vision 2020 because we needed to put a stake in the ground and actually have measurable progress and goals. So we identified.
I love that. I just love the whole vision of that. Put a stake in the ground and say, we're doing this. Let's make this happen. And let's scrutinize what we do. And I love it. It's quite inspirational.
Well, thank you. And, you know, and again, I'll just say we're not the first company to coin the phrase Vision 2020 or to identify 2020 as a goal.
There are campaigns around 2020, for sure.
Yeah, but it was new for us, and we are not a company that inherently or easily measures things, but we felt like it was really important, both for our own knowledge and to be able to communicate externally how we're doing. And so we identified 4 buckets within the environmental realm and 4 within the social realm to really focus on in terms of our progress towards this ultimate goal of the least amount of environmental sustainability impact and the most social value impact possible, all while maintaining our financial viability.
Right. Staying in business is really important.
Yeah. It's really important. Otherwise, it doesn't matter what we say. And so on the environmental side, the four buckets are materials, chemistry, carbon, and water. And on the social side, we have conscious business practices, fair wages and benefits, workers' voice, and worker and community happiness.
Wow.
And I know those may sound strange.
No, they don't sound strange to me at all. I mean, it really matters. Happiness is a key ingredient to success. And I mean, scientifically, it is not an airy-fairy, oh, we want everybody, you know, singing kumbaya. But happy workers create a sustainable and just planet. So go on. I'm with you on happiness.
Thank you. Well, it's true. We feel very strongly that we need to provide work that leads, that is not dead-end work. It is work that elevates the workers' well-being, that provides avenues for new opportunities, perhaps in their workplace or in their lives, that is, you know, a stepping stone to something else,
right,
that gives them options. That's really what it comes down to. And so all of these elements work together. Work and community happiness works really closely with worker voice. Do they feel confident enough to ask for what they need or say what's not working well for them in their workplace or in their community without feeling under siege or in danger or at risk of being discriminated against, et cetera, for voicing
right
their opinions? Fair wages and benefits, I said already, you know, you can't really do much if you don't have enough money to not only pay for your basic needs, but to save for a rainy day.
I don't think it's funny, but it's so true. It's like, at the end of the day, it's a business, and I don't take it lightly, but it does. You have to keep in business to keep making a difference, or all of these great initiatives close their doors.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, the flip side of this is every time we are tempted by a sale ticket or a low price or, you know, some kind of crazy, you can't believe how cheap this item is kind of thing, somebody's paying for that in the end.
Yes.
And I shudder to think, you know, how much our labor force in our supply chain pays the bulk of that.
Yes, it's so true. And I think there's integrity in your just acknowledging it. You're not saying that we've got it all here at Eileen Fisher's, just stand behind us and the world will change. It's just not that simple. But you're doing the pieces that you can impact, and that's what matters to me.
Right. I thank you for saying that. We are absolutely on a journey. We're not perfect. We haven't figured all of this out yet. And you know, I do want to just touch briefly on the conscious business practices, which is the one area of the social, of our social commitment that actually turns the mirror on ourselves, because we recognize that we can't put the full weight of achieving these goals on our suppliers themselves. We play a big role in this. How do we place orders with them? How often do we change those orders? How often do we give them orders that are actually impossible for them to achieve within the deadline we've given them, which then in turn causes them to have excessive overtime or to pay improper wages and then maybe not even tell us because they're afraid we won't give them business again.
Right.
So
right,
it's a vicious cycle. And I feel like this is where all of us in the apparel industry have a huge responsibility to be really honest about the connection between our own behaviors and the supplier's reality. So that's become a huge priority in our company. We call it supply chain excellence, and it's something that's going to take several years for us to tease out. But we're really, really focused on making that work.
And committed to it. And that leads me to another question. I work with a lot of companies doing green consulting. We call it green from the inside out, because they may sell a sustainable product or really great cars in terms of energy efficiency and air quality emissions and all of that. But what are you doing inside it? Do you feel that there's a corporate culture of buy-in to this consciousness? Do you focus on that? Does that make sense?
It does. It's an excellent question. I would say that because of, you know, we have... we have earned a certain reputation in the business world of having really strong values of all types of values, worker well-being values, employee well-being values, sustainability, et cetera. And so because of that, we attract a certain type of job applicant. And we have the luxury of selecting, because there are a lot of people who come and inquire about work here. We do select people. We make every effort to select people to work here who share all those kinds of values, or are open to them, even if they haven't quite stepped into them themselves in their personal lives. And so there's so much passion here. We can't find enough ways to engage people in the world of the big S, sustainability, environment, right, labor, et cetera. We communicate all the time. We engage people. We have a number of different teams, cross-functional teams, and task forces that are looking at all of these issues and on a daily basis and really making them their own. And it's totally gratifying. I love when I hear somebody say, you know, yesterday I was just a designer and now I realize the impact of my work, and now I'm a designer with a conscience.
I love it.
That's the kind
that
of
matters.
Light bulb
yes.
we want to have. Yeah.
Yes. And it's again, it's that ripple effect. It's changing how they show up in the world. It'll change things with their families. I mean, it's really an incredible stand. Like you say, once you put that stake in the ground, ripples start popping up here and there and everywhere. And to me, it's the most important thing about impacting change. Let's get into quickly, because there's two more things that I want to ask that I think are really important. Your certification as a B Corp, and then your takeaway for our listeners, a message about one thing you would like our listeners and me to take away that we can, you know, put into action. So tell us about the B Corp celebration.
So, okay, real quick, we did become a certified B Corporation earlier this year. We are totally excited, and with that, we are now firmly a triple bottom line company, which means we are measuring our success not only from a financial perspective, but also in terms of our environmental performance and our social value performance. And the B Corporation community is a community of about 1,400 companies around the world who have made the same kind of commitment for themselves. We've joined the ranks of Patagonia, Ben & Jerry's, New Belgium Brewery, Dansko Shoes, King
Seventh
Arthur
generation.
Flower.
Seventh generation, yes.
Seventh
Etsy.
Generation, thank
Etsy.
You. Yes,
like,
exactly.
Whoa. Yes.
So, great.
It's big, but a B Corp is a new type of company that uses the power of business to solve social and environmental problems. I mean, it's on the cutting edge. And for your company, I know a friend of mine, sorry, from a company called You Conserve did it, and her company isn't nearly the size of yours. It's a lot of work. It's a big commitment to move and to get that approval.
It is, and we've been actually thinking about this for several years. But for us, it's about joining this community, supporting the community, saying that we want to see more businesses join this movement. We feel ourselves that we have a role in what we call business as a movement in influencing how business is done in the world. So we really want to see this community grow, and by joining it, we felt like we needed to, you know, to have a voice.
Joining the ranks. It's
yes.
When I saw that, it's like very exciting. Let's ring the bell for that. Okay, very quickly, we have about a minute for you to give us the big jewel, the takeaway. I'm hanging
no
on your every word.
You know, I don't have the big thing, but I would say that I encourage people to go in and ask questions. Go ask the salesperson of your in your favorite store, how is this product made? Find out if it matches your values. Is it organic? What were the people paid in the supply chain? How does this company support women? Whatever your value is, ask about it in the store and buy things that match your values.
It's such a good takeaway. It is something you can do. Start ask questions. Ask questions in restaurants. Where do your eggs come from? Where does your poultry come from? That's the conscious consumer part. Amy Hall, I hope that you enjoyed this as much as I did. I enjoy my shows. I enjoy learning. I enjoy getting excited about people that are about hope, possibility, and change. And you personally are one, and you're certainly at the right place. So thank you for taking an hour out of your day to share with us all you did about the social consciousness at Eileen Fisher. I really appreciate it, and you and everybody. We've got great shows lined up. Of course we do. Our Down to Earth show is Joseph Barrios from the TEP Solar Programs on Tuesday. And on next Saturday, Dominique Browning, Mom's Clean Air Force. You're not going to believe that one. Make it a great green day, and thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World.